New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good morning and welcome to episode 82 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name's Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host John Shipley. John, I don't know about you, but I've got a little bit more pep in my step at this time of the week now that we're a few more days removed from another Jaguars loss, and I guess a couple days closer to potentially another one. But I don't know, the rush of the holidays has kind of gone past me at last. So how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Anytime you can no longer have to talk about that Christmas Eve Tampa Bay game, I think you're doing good. So I'm doing good. Last home game of the regular season, maybe of the season, depending on how the last 2 weeks go. So, you know, big one on Sunday versus the Carolina Panthers, who I normally have nothing vested, but I have talked for the two teams I probably have talked the most crap about this year, the Panthers and the Jets. So for it to just blow up in my face spectacularly would be I would deserve the dunking. So I am interested to see how this one goes.
I think I actually picked the Panthers to win this game way back when the regular season schedule first came out, like during the summer. And I was like, I had the Jaguars finishing like 13-4 or something like that probably. But I thought, I don't know, like I was a Frank Reich fan at the time, and I thought like the Jags would just like drop a random one. And then once the season started and like Bryce Young didn't look good, Frank Reich was like the earliest firing of a head coach in at least a couple of decades, and everything seemed to be going downhill. So I was like, I don't know, that's probably going to be chalked that up as an easy win in week 17. And now here we are, where it feels like the turntables have flipped once again. And as you said, like that last week, the Jags have probably been the worst team in football over the past month. Like I don't really have anything to argue against that. And so it'll definitely be a nice clash of the Titans this week.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who else is overlap. I'd say Washington probably. The Chargers. I don't know. The Giants have been a little bit more spry than them.
Yeah.
The Steelers before they beat the Bengals. And then, you know, the team that they're playing, I think, on Sunday, the Panthers, though. The Panthers – last 2 weeks, probably the most successful weeks. They beat the Falcons without scoring a touchdown. A completely ridiculous game. And that game felt much more like, oh, wow, the Falcons and Arthur Smith and Desmond Ridder are terrible, as opposed to the Panthers are turning a corner. But then last week against Green Bay, like I'm not even going to make the – it's a Joe Barry comment because, well, yeah, it's fair to say, but I'll concede, like – Bryce made more throws in that game than I think he's made like in the other, what, like 14 starts combined. Yeah. So you're definitely playing them at their best point, which still isn't good, but nonetheless, like just in terms of like recent trajectory, you know, they're playing a bit better than they have lately, and the Jags are playing their worst football of the season. Like, I feel like by far, because we talked about this last week, but on defense, they're completely healthy and they're still like just getting absolutely gashed. And on offense, that's not the case. You know, you're missing Christian Kirk. We'll see if Zay Jones plays this week. He looked like he was, you know, taking every part in individual drills with the wide receivers yesterday. Didn't look like he was being held back very much. So maybe he has a chance to go this weekend, but between the injuries of wide receiver, the injuries at offensive line, Trevor Lawrence stacking up injuries each week, obviously the offense is different, but the Jags have a fully healthy defense and they've been getting gashed like nobody else. So I'd say, you know, these are probably two of the worst teams over the last month, but the Panthers are playing a smidge better.
Just a smidge better. Yeah, I feel like both of their two recent games are honestly more of indictments on their opponents than like the Panthers doing great. I mean, they do deserve some credit, but like you were saying, like the Falcons offense was just, they were down a couple healthy offensive linemen. And then like, it feels like Arthur Smith's time in Atlanta is coming to a close. And then like, I feel like the Joe Barry excuse is a pretty good one for the Packers. I've got one of my good friends is a Packers fan and I picked him up from the airport the other day. And the whole car ride was just Joe Barry talk. And like, we got to get rid of this guy because the rest of the Packers defense has so many like good names on its roster, but then it doesn't come together well as a whole. So it's kind of an interesting contrast to the Jaguars, who we've been saying like have been beating themselves the whole year. So we'll see. We'll start off with Jags offense versus Panthers defense. I think this is definitely like the bigger side of the ball to watch because Jacksonville has obviously had a lot of offensive struggles in terms of shooting themselves in the foot, but especially in the past month. And then the defensive side of the ball for the Panthers is probably like their strong suit with defensive coordinator. I looked up his pronunciation, Ejiro Evero. Evero's not too bad, but yeah. So Evero is really good. He was with the Broncos for the past few years in that Broncos London game where Trevor threw like the pretty gnarly red zone interception to Justin Simmons. That was Evero's defense that he was coordinating then. And he's done a pretty nice job in Carolina. Like they've got some good pieces in Brian Burns and Derek Brown, but really like I think their defense is one of those that's like playing better than the sum of their parts. So he's like, he's almost like anti Joe Barry in that way, but like it'll be interesting to see whether the Jaguars are able to get back on track against not super talented but well coordinated defense with so many people coming back. I think one player that you didn't mention was Cam Robinson, who practiced this week and could be playing off injured reserve for the first time on Sunday, and that would definitely be huge.
So I looked up, you know, the stats been out there about their record with Cam Robinson versus their record without Cam Robinson. And I like looked up like they're like on and off splits with him. And like, they're like better as an offense and then passing and rushing all three of those. And like by EPA per play, and Trevor Lawrence is better with him on the field, but it's only like marginally, which makes me wonder like, okay, part of it is he's missed some of their games against the best defenses they've played. You know, he didn't play versus the Chiefs, the Ravens, or the Browns. He did play against the 49ers, but I feel like other than that, like their easiest stretch of the season came with Robinson at left tackle. So I'm interested to see just how big of a difference it does make, because I don't know, when I watch the line, I don't think the tackles are the issue. You know, yeah. Walk a little maybe over the last few weeks has given up a higher clip of pressures than you would think. But before they started playing musical chairs with him and moving him in and out of the lineup and into and out of positions, you know, he was having a really strong season. I just wonder how much it really does change, even if getting one of your more experienced guys back is obviously a positive. And I don't know, what would your guess be on who the starting offensive line would be? I'm assuming Robinson is back and is starting at left tackle. Everything Peterson has said this week has kind of indicated that. Who do you think would be the starting line under that likely scenario?
Yeah, I think Cam is going to come back and start at left tackle. And then center through right tackle is going to be Fortner, Sheriff, Harrison, as it has been. But then I would expect Ezra Cleveland to continue starting at left guard, and Walker Little is then like the swing tackle, because I think it was Mark Long who asked Peterson on Tuesday, like with Cam coming back, assuming he does play on Sunday, would that make Walker the swing tackle? And Doug said, I mean, yeah, it would. And so I think, like, as we have been saying for a few weeks, like Walker is just a tackle only at this point, and he can go in on either side and play pretty well. But I think, like, obviously they trade for Ezra Cleveland for a reason. And I think, like, obviously they had long-term plans for Ezra when they trade for him with, like, the intent of probably re-signing him. in the offseason. And so, like, I almost feel like this is kind of like a tryout for him to, like, get a little bit more used to the scheme, get more used to playing, like, next to Robinson and Fortner, and just, like, kind of hold a tryout on the field for the Jaguars to determine whether they do want to keep him or if they'd be better suited moving on and finding another guard replacement.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think your last point, that's exactly right. I guess, is Robinson in Cleveland that much better than Little in Cleveland?
So the point I was going to make about Cam is, like, I don't think it makes that much of a difference for the passing attack, especially, like, since Lawrence is either not going to play or is going to be not 100% for this game. But he's also been, like, better at avoiding pressure off the edges than the interior, and, like the drop-off in pass protection between all three tackles, like, isn't that really that big. But I think in the run game is, like, where we could actually see a pretty big difference from Robinson. I think it'll be interesting to see, like, because I don't think Robinson and Cleveland have played together, maybe for one game, and that's usually, like, a pretty big deal is having chemistry on the offensive line. But I think we could see, like, a decent amount of, like, Cam out in space. Like, my hot take on the Tuesday show was that Cam was going to have a pancake on, like, some kind of screen pass. So I think he's going to, like, make a difference in the ground game, though.
Okay, my hot take is Chad Muma makes a special teams tackle in the second quarter. I want you to know that's the same exact thing. That's the same thing. I see you shaking your head because it sounds ridiculous. Same thing.
We already went over this though. Like, I had a good one set up with Brian Burns. And I was like, I can't do that. So how else can I portray that, like, Cam Robinson is going to have a good game and, like, make an impact? Like, it's not like I can say Cam Robinson is going to have three catches for 40 yards.
I want to set some over-unders for this game and see where we stand. Tank Bigsby. I will take it down for 4.5.
Under.
2.5 touches.
You could say under 0.5 snaps. I would still probably take that.
So I'm not under on 2.5 touches? Yeah. Okay. 2.5 snaps over-under.
Under still.
Running back rushing attempts, 15.5.
15.5? Oh, yeah. By all running backs.
Yeah. Well,
going over. I think this has to be, like, a pretty big ETN game.
So the Panthers are number 12 over the last month, which I think is the important thing, like, when you're looking at EPA per play and stuff, like, when it comes to matchups. Looking at, like, recent games, like, at least within, like, the last month, as opposed to, like, season-long numbers. Over the last month, the Panthers are 14th in rushing – no, 12th in rushing EPA per play allowed and 14th in rushing success rate. They've been a good run defense. I think the Jaguars are going to, like, throw it 50 times again in this game. That's my – I'm going under 15.5 rushing attempts. I say ETN gets 10 carries.
See, that's what I think – will happen, but I think what should happen and needs to happen is that they just, like, feed ETN. Like, this is, like, the first week I've gotten to the point where I'm like, you got to, like, get him 20 carries, because usually, like, that stat where, oh, a running back reaches 20 carries or 25 carries and the team is, like, 8-3 or whatever is, like, such a BS stat, because obviously, like, when you're winning, you're going to run the ball more. But this week is the first one where I'm like, even if you go down by multiple scores in the first quarter, like, you got to stick with the game plan and you got to stick with ETN, because, like, it's a long game. There's still three more quarters. Hypothetically, like, Bryce Young isn't going to put up that many points. So you got to, like, stay a little bit patient. I feel like the Jags offense have been, like, scared to punt the whole year. Like, they're just, we talk about how Lawrence, like, lives, has that Josh Allen in him where he lives every play like it's the last. And I feel like that's kind of what both sides of the ball are doing. They're, like, putting so much stock into each play, but it's like, mistakes happen in the league, mistakes happen in any sport. And so, like, you gotta just, like, move on and stick, like, with your game plan, even if something does come up. And, like, I get that they were down by 30 points last week, and so you do kind of have to pass in that circumstance. But I mean, I don't know, maybe Bryce Young will look like Baker Mayfield and then Joe Flacco the week before and then Jake Browning the week before that. So I don't know, but I think this is, like, the week where they really, really just have to commit to it and don't let it go.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And don't know. They probably, in that sense, didn't go as far as the offensive line goes, right?
Yeah.
Can they block Brian Burns, and can they block Derrick Brown? I think Derrick Brown's one of the more underrated, like, defensive linemen in the NFL right now. And it's because he's more of a run-first guy instead of, like, a flashy pass rusher. Sorry, my cat's going nuts. I think he's one of the more underrated interior defensive linemen in general. Can they, like, get enough production on first and second? Because that's what it feels like why they go away from the running game, is because they waste so many first and second downs specifically, and they get into so many third and longs that it feels like they think the best way to avoid third and long is to throw it on early down. So can they get early down success against this front? I'm a little skeptical.
I'm skeptical too, but I'm also skeptical that they can get early down production passing the ball. Like, I feel like it hasn't worked for them, like the whole, like, always throw on second and 10, which per the analytics you definitely should do. So, like, I don't know, but it hasn't worked for them. So I feel like you got to, like, try something, like, just stick with it.
All right, we're going to pull up the data. All right. And see if I can throw it in your face or not. So this is called early downs, right?
What's called early downs?
First and second down is the parameters we're using?
Yes.
Okay. They are 14th in dropback EPA per play and 5th in success rate on first and second down.
5th in success rate? No way. That's crazy. What about the last month?
I think it was Derek Klassen said Lawrence has the most and long attempts of any quarterback in the NFL this year.
5th in success rate is definitely a lot higher. Yeah. Was that specifically on second?
First and second down. First and second down.
Okay.
Do you want specifically a first down?
No, I want first and second down in the past month. I'm just interested.
Yeah, yeah. That's the past month.
Oh.
yeah. See, hoisted right by your own petard.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. You just got.
Worked? Like, did you? I guess you did. Like, look. Did you look it up because you thought it was actually working and I was wrong, or only because you thought
you I was wrong? I already had, like, all of their stuff, like, within the last month, because I was looking at Panthers and Jaguars splits over the last month. And
right. But did you expect the success rate to be that high, or were you just looking for an opportunity to dunk on me?
Both.
Okay.
I was pretty sure their early down passing stuff was pretty good, because, again, Lawrence, other than a few stupid fumbles, like, hasn't been their problem. Like, he's, I think, ranks first in the NFL in – first or second in big time throws over the last month. He ranks 33rd in pressures allowed, like, quarterback, and specifically, like, percentage of pressures that the offense allows, how many are on him. He's 33rd in the NFL over the last month. There's a lot of turnover worthy plays, but I think PFF dings him for those interceptions that are coming on the miscommunications, etc. So I wonder how different that looks, but he has, like, 12 big-time throws of 20 yards or more over the last 4 weeks. Like, he's still kind of slinging that thing. And I think it's more a byproduct of the offense has been bad than him. So I did expect for that early down to be a little bit better. I don't think they're wrong in saying that their only way to move the ball is through Trevor Lawrence. But I do think that they have to at least attempt to run the ball. You know, like, right.
That's really all I'm saying is, like, you don't have to, like, make the run pass splits, like, all the way up to 50-50. Just, like, increase the run splits by, like, 5 to 10%, because, like, you're just, like, getting way too predictable at this point.
You still got Balky Bald, for a record. Would that be Baldwin Bald? Yeah. I don't know.
We'd all be surprised if it didn't happen.
Yeah, fair enough. I guess. Then my next question is, like, I think the weak part of this Panthers defense has been the secondary. A lot of guys in and out of the lineup. I think CJ Henderson was a healthy scratch last week. I know JC Horn's been hurt a lot. He's really good when he's healthy, but he's been hurt a lot. Shaquille Griffin played last week. So there's an outside chance that Shaquille Griffin can get a second win against the Jaguars with a completely different team. I had
no idea he was on the Panthers. That's crazy.
If any pass goes his way and he gets a hand on it, I'm convinced he's going to bring it to the Jaguars sideline and, like, drop it off to them and get back on the field.
Bro, you're on your third team in a year. Like,
the Houston game, every single play, no matter the result or no matter what he did, he would like say something back to the Jags like sideline. It was the best bit of the game. So I guess that's my thing, is also like maybe the way to attack this Panthers defense, even though, you know, your quarterback's banged up and it already feels like, you know, you've kind of, you know, ridden his right arm completely and, you know, he's kind of got beat the hell as a result. Maybe the best way is to, you know, sling the ball this game. I mean, the Panthers are a worse pass defense than they are a rush defense by a considerable bit too.
I think they hold up pretty well against like number one receivers. I was reading some fantasy piece earlier that said they've allowed the 6 fewest fantasy points to wide receivers, and only three wide receivers have had like at least 19 fantasy points against them. And it was like Justin Jefferson, Terry McLaurin, Mike Evans, I'm pretty sure. Or I think Tyreek was one of them. So I don't know. Like, I think you probably can throw against them out wide, but I think they're like especially good in the slot. So like, not that I was expecting Parker Washington to do anything, but now I'm definitely not expecting him to do anything. So like, I think it's fair to like look for like perimeter production from the wide receivers, especially with CJ not playing.
Is it a Kevin Ridley week?
I don't know, man. I missed my mark last week.
You did. I took it from you. I took it and I ran.
Yeah.
The first time I said all year, not all year, but as the bit goes, the first time I've said in ages that it'd be a Calvin Ridley week, he gets 2 touchdowns. So I feel like I'm now kind of the, you know, the dictator of where it goes. So you tell me if it's Calvin Ridley week, and I'll tell you if you're wrong.
Okay. I think it is a Calvin Ridley week.
I think they're going to pull out all the stops, try several, like regardless of if Lawrence or Beathard plays, which we haven't talked about really. I think that Ridley is going to see a lot of, you know, looks outside. And I guess that's the next thing is, I don't know, as far as Lawrence goes, this is the most, like considering it's Friday, 12:30 at the time of this recording, this is the most unsure I've been of him playing in a game this year. Just, you know, the lack of practice this week, the fact that it is his throwing shoulder. Part of me still thinks he's going to play. Like, his arm hasn't been in a sling. He held his own press conference. Part of me thinks that, you know, maybe. But on the other hand, I was, by this time before the Browns game, this time before the Buccaneers game, and I couldn't tell you what I thought the Saints game. That was too far ago. Too many takes since then. I definitely thought he was playing in those two instances. I don't want to just say I thought he was going to play against the Browns and then find out I'm just talking out my ass. So, I mean the Saints. So I have no idea what my take was back then.
I feel like I thought that he was going to play against the Saints. So if I thought he was going to play against the Saints, I'd like to think that you also did. For all three games, for sure, for me, I thought he was going to play like by the end of the week, even if I had some questions or thought it was kind of up in doubt by the beginning of the week. But I feel the same way, where like this is the first week that I'm still pretty unsure by the end of the week. If I had to guess one way or the other, I think he does play, just because, as you said, even though he hasn't practiced, like he did have a player media availability, he hasn't had like his arm in a sling. He didn't appear at practice yesterday during like when media was out there, but he was out there on Tuesday, I believe. And like, clearly he's like a psychopath warrior who's going to do anything he can to be out there. So I think he is going to play, but it wouldn't surprise me if he gets held out because he had a shoulder injury that knocked him out of last week's game. And I feel like when he had the concussion against the Ravens, like a lot of people could see that he was kind of like in a little bit of shoulder pain too. And Doug was asked about it after the game and said, like, oh, I didn't notice it. But, I mean, it was Doug in a press conference, so who knows. But I wonder, like, if he originally injured his shoulder in that Ravens game and then he re-aggravated it or, like, made it a little bit worse during the Bucs game. And I think if that happened, then they're going to be a lot more cautious and just hold him out of this one, because Peterson's whole thing this year has been, like, obviously not every football player is 100% healthy. But when we're deciding whether or not a player is going to play a game, when he's hurt is like based on the risk of re-injury. And so if Lawrence did in fact re-injure his already hurt shoulder, then that makes me think there's maybe a slim chance he plays this week.
How different is the quarterback position? Like, just in terms of how much leniency there is to holding a guy out for injury?
It's a big deal. I think it's like franchise quarterback slash effectively good starter, which Lawrence is, and then just like the quarterback position in general, and then every other position downward.
Like most players probably wouldn't have played with the other injuries he's had this year, more or less. Yeah, that's it's a tough one. I don't know. I the way I see this matchup, I don't think my prediction changes either way with him in or out, but it does say a lot that, you know, they're in must-win territory. And, like, it's kind of the story of the season. They're in must-win territory, and they're not sure if the quarterback's, you know, going to play. So it's a tough one to be in. Gus, you got any more takes on the offense, my friend?
The only other note I had is that the Panthers' defense ranks fourth in blitz rate on the season with 34%, but they're only 26th in success rate on blitzes at 24%. And so I think it would just be interesting to see regardless of who's in at quarterback for the Jaguars, like they should be able to take advantage of blitzes when the Panthers do send more than four. And so I'm curious if that ends up happening or not.
I feel like the Jaguars especially lately have struggled with blitzes. Like Tampa Bay, they just couldn't block the blitz, you know, even in like six-man protection. Like they were just having leaks, like guys just like getting free runs. And I don't know why it is. Like I feel like every quarterback, well, most quarterbacks, I know there are a few who aren't, are like worse against blitz rather than no blitz. But Lawrence especially, I think the splits are pretty significant for how he performs against the blitz and then when teams are just rushing for. So I'm interested to see, like, even with, you know, them not being a dominant team in terms of results, how much that kind of impacts the Jaguars offense, because I don't think they're a good team offense against the blitz right now.
Yeah, I will say in Trevor's defense, like, I feel like the pass catchers don't really help out a ton, because it's like, when have you ever seen an opposing defense send six players and then a Jags player like catches a contested slant and takes it 40 yards? Like, they're barely doing enough in terms of like just getting to their spots and catching the ball when Lawrence is under pressure. And then like there's nothing above that too. So whether it's the offensive line or the receivers, like, I will say that like Lawrence for sure is better when there's no pressure than when there is, but I don't think it's all on him.
That's a fair point. Well, Gus, we'll be right back. Go over the defense. Gus, I again just want to take the foresight to apologize, because I'm expecting a Bryce Young game. I'll come out and say it, dude. I'm expecting the Bryce Young game. I'm expecting DJ Chark to have some kind of a revenge game, whether it's maybe not a lot of yards, but at least like one big catch and or one touchdown. I guess that's my take. DJ Chark makes the most impactful play of the game.
That's a good one. Yeah, no, I'm on the same wavelength where like I'm not like completely sold he's going to like score a touchdown or go over whatever his yards prop is, but he's 100% going to have like a huge first down the sideline contested catch that just like steeps all the energy out of the stadium.
Oh, what 1,000,000%, man. Again, this is a offense that it hasn't been good. It's been disastrous more often than not this season. Over the last month, though, they've been a little better than they were at previous points. That's not ultimately saying a lot, but, you know, over the last, you know, 4 weeks, they've been 14th in success rate on offense. I mean, compare that to the early part of the season where they were literally, you know, one of the worst offenses in the league. They're 14th in EPA per play. You know, they're 19th in dropback per EPA per play. You know, they're top 20 in dropback success rate. It's been a better offense over the last month than it was at any point prior to the season. Like, this feels like if the Jaguars played the Panthers in week five, you could expect, like, one of the worst, like, offensive games ever. I think the Jaguars are getting the Panthers at a bad time. And I say that as somebody who has mocked the Panthers unmercifully at several points this season, especially Bryce Young. But I'm expecting a Bryce Young week, dude. I'll say it. Bryce Young, 300 yards.
Boom. Oh, my gosh. Disgusting. I'm going to go Bryce Young under 200 yards.
Bryce Young under 200 yards?
Yeah, I don't – I'm sticking with the guns. I'm sticking with the anti-short king agenda. I just can't see it. I feel like the Jaguars just, like, need to make Bryce Young win the game and, like, not have Trevor Lawrence / C.J. Beathard lose them the game. And, like, I feel like the Jags have, like, been a little bit up and down against the run this season, kind of a lot of peaks and valleys. But the past 2 weeks, they've kind of started to shore things up a little bit more, especially last week against the Bucs. Like, I know the Bucs, like, scored a lot of points and their offense looked really good, but they averaged, like, 2 yards a carry on the ground and then 8 yards per pass attempt. So I think, like, Chuba Hubbard, like, isn't really going to do a lot, and it's going to have to be a Bryce Young game. And I personally, even with the way the Jags season is going, I'm still not going to bet on Bryce Young.
Yeah, I just – the Jaguars defense is just – they aren't doing the things right now I think lead to big games against bad quarterbacks. Like, they have a low pressure rate. I believe their pressure rate for a season is like 3.5% lower than it was last year. You know, they have a low sack rate. They've been a really bad tackling team. They're, you know, playing a lot of off coverage to begin with. And they've been bad against, you know, containing quarterbacks on the ground, you know, just in terms of limiting quarterback scrambling. And Baker Mayfield himself, you know, had a couple impactful scrambles for them. You put everything together and no, I don't know. I'll go ahead and say I'm betting on Bryce Young to give the Jaguars defense trouble on Sunday. I don't think it's a defense from earlier in the year that we could believe in to just destroy a bad quarterback. Like, you know, week 8, Kenny Pickett. I hold Kenny Pickett in the same regard I do Bryce Young generally. And it was obvious the Jaguars were going to kill Kenny Pickett that week. I don't think it's the same defense, guys. I mean, am I wrong? Am I crazy?
I don't think it's the same defense, and I don't think they can kill Bryce Young, but, like, I just don't think they're going to roll around and be killed by Bryce Young. Like, I think the Panthers are scoring, like, 20 to 24 points in this game, and, like, the Jags defense will be good enough to win, and then it's just a matter of what the offense does.
For the record, I was wrong on my previous stats. I was still looking at the first and second down. They're 25th in EPA per player in the last month and 19th in success rate. So I've been owned by trying to own you. So they basically have been the Broncos offense over the last month. Would you pick the Broncos offense to have success against the Jaguars pre-Jared Stidham?
No. Russell Wilson isn't nearly as bad as Bryce Young, but, like, he's not good. Like, I don't know.
The teams that are beat, like, have been beating up on the Jags. Like, the offenses aren't exactly, like, high profile other than Baltimore. Like,
no.
Cleveland's offense still isn't a very good offense in terms of efficiency. Like, Joe Flacco has turned the ball over as much as Trevor Lawrence has.
Here's where I'm getting a little bit of copium. The Panthers run 11 personnel at the second highest rate in the league, 93% clip. So they're very, like, obviously they'll do, like, different formations out of 11 personnel, but when you have three receivers on the field over 90% of the time, then you tend to be, like, a little bit predictable. And I feel like the Jags defense has been gashed more by, like, heavy personnel teams. Like, the Bengals probably run a lot of 11 personnel, even when, like, Ja'Marr Chase or T. Higgins are hurt. But, like, the Ravens and the Browns especially, and then a little bit of the Bucks, like, will, like, lean into a little bit more of, like, either two tight end or two running back sets. And so I think it benefits the Jags defense this week that, A, they're playing – an offense that, like, uses light fronts or light personnel a lot more, and B, they're playing an offense that uses, like, the same personnel all the time. And so, like, be able to hypothetically game plan a little bit better for it.
That's fair. And that I can understand. Like, they are probably, like you said, an easier offense like to game plan for. Because, again, it's still not like they have like a ton of weapons, you know, outside. Like, obviously,
right.
DJ Chark's one of the big options, and he hasn't really been the receiver anybody expected after his breakout year. Adam Thielen sees like a ton of targets. I don't know. I think that they don't have the position guys, especially to hurt the Jaguars. But I don't know. It just, this feels like a Jaguars defense has given up so many easy plays over the last month. Like, I struggle to be swayed by them against a bad quarterback, because I don't think they've been good against bad. I'm sorry, Jake Browning, like the, you know, pumpkin is back out. Like, it's obvious that Jake Browning isn't actually good. You know, yeah. I know Joe Flacco's throwing for a ton of yards against everybody, but he's not nearly as good as the Jaguars made him look. And I know Baker Mayfield is on a tear, but that's against the Panthers, the Jaguars, and the Falcons. I don't think he's as good as the Jaguars made him look. I think Lamar is the only good quarterback they've played over the last month, but all four have kind of shredded them. So that's more or less where I'm coming from.
I do think that all those teams do have, like, legit good play callers, though. Even, like, the Bucs, who I don't know the offense coordinator's name off the top of my head, but I know he's a legit, like, good play caller and, like, a potential head coach candidate. But you also said that, like, they don't really have anyone that, like, scares you in terms of pass catchers, and, like, that's my biggest thing. It's like,
yeah,
Bryce Young doesn't scare me, but, like, that point is, like, kind of void because of all the non-scary quarterbacks that have gone for 300 plus yards against Jacksonville recently. But, like, they don't have an Amari Cooper or a Mike Evans or a David Njoku or a Jamar Chase. Like, DJ Chark is probably going to have, like, a really big play. I agree with you there. But, like, Chenault and Tommy Tremble and, like, whoever else they have in offense, like, I don't know. I think Tyson Campbell actually, like, hasn't looked like we're expecting him to, but he's also had, like, been going up one-on-one against, like, Jamar Chase and Mike Evans. Like, I'm not particularly surprised that he got killed by those players. Like, I'm not expecting him to get killed by DJ Chark.
That's fair. For the record, from Summer Sports, the personnel that the Jaguars are worst against in terms of EPA per player allowed in order are 22 personnel, 12 personnel, and 21 personnel. They produce a negative EPA per play against 10, 12, 11, and 13 personnel. So, you know, it looks like you're right that, you know, they are better against those personnels, which...
Balky ball.
Okay. Yeah. You see, it's harder for me to balky ball you when they aren't doing anything good. I can't pull out some asinine stat that one of his players have gotten when nothing's going good.
Yeah, it's harder with, like, bigger sample sizes too. Because in the beginning of the season, like, Brenton Strange had 3 catches, but it was, like, actually not terrible because it'd only been through, like, a handful of games. But now it's like he has 6 catches through almost the entire season. So what are you gonna do? You can't hurt me now.
Does he have 6 catches?
That would probably be my guess, is that he has exactly 6.
Okay, before looking at it, I'm not looking. My guess is under 6 catches. Your guess is 6?
Yeah.
He has 4.
Oh, brother.
He last caught a pass on October 15th against the Indianapolis Colts.
One more game, and then we make the last year jokes.
He last saw a target in week 10 against the San Francisco 49ers. You got ball.
Dude, the Jags, I was looking at, like, usage splits, obviously, to, like, prep for the pod, and the Jags are 5th in usage of 13 personnel. Like, and they don't do anything out of it. It's crazy. I feel like we talked a lot, or at least I talked a lot about, like, before the season, like, about how Strange is going to impact, like, those multiple tight end sets, and they're going to run a lot more 13 personnel. They have, but they just don't do anything out of it.
It very much feels like they lack an identity, which, I don't know, can you kind of say that for the defense too? Like, what is the defense's identity really right now? Like, what does either side of the ball do well right now. Because I know what the defense wants to do, but I still don't think they stop the run well. I mean, I'm curious how much different Tampa Bay's running splits were in the first half compared to the second half. Because they basically were running out the clock in the second half, and it felt obvious that they were going to run the ball. So I'll try to find that. But, like, I think the thing that they try to be best at is stopping the run. And I think that they've been bad at that. They haven't gotten turnovers. Like, what is their defensive identity to you?
I think – like, I don't think they have one right now. I think what they want it to be is applying pressure. And, like, stopping the run is a big part of that and probably, like, the first part of that. But I think ultimately they want to make opposing quarterbacks uncomfortable and just, again, really just apply pressure and make the offense's job difficult and, like, kind of like bring the fight to the offense rather than being one of those defenses that's like, we're going to like sit back in a too high zone and just give you everything underneath. And you're going to have to, we're going to try to like urge a mistake out of you because you're getting impatient. And the Jags defense is the opposite, where it's like, no, we're coming straight to the fight. We're like, we're forcing a mistake out of you. We're not going to wait around for a mistake. And I feel like they just don't really like have the horses to fully carry out that vision. But for the offense, I got no idea. I feel like Doug and Press a couple of times have said like they want to be efficient and explosive on offense. It's like, so does everyone. Like, and you're also neither of those right now. So like, now what? I feel like their identity is just like put the ball into 16's hands and see what happens, for better or worse.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't feel like anything really cohesive is happening, which, like, for as much as I killed, you know, the front office, especially our last episode, I will concede, like, to them, like, if I'm, you know, Trent Baalke, I'm probably thinking, like, the guys I picked aren't being well coached right now, and it, like, on either side of the ball. So I think that's probably fair. Gus, you got anything else on defense before we get into score predictions?
Yeah, I got one last note, and it's pretty much the exact same note as the last one, where the Jags defense ranks 10th in blitz rate and 24th in success rate. So both of these defenses like to blitz, but they're not really great at it. And so I think that's going to, like, be one of the keys to the game is, like, which defense is actually able to hit on their blitzes and generate a couple sacks or a couple turnovers or a couple negative plays for the opposing offense. I think the blitzes will go a long way when they do pop up.
So who turns the ball over more on Sunday? The Jaguars starting quarterback, whether it be Beathard or Lawrence, or the Panthers? Bryce Young.
I think they're going to tie at 2 turnovers each.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm definitely expecting just a lot of turnovers from both sides, really.
I was gonna, like, that's my thing with the turnovers is I don't even know how you really stop it. You know, like it seems like it's something that just like comes in bunches, and I know a lot of it probably has to do with ball security, etc. But how do you actually just turn the ball over like they have? Like I
confidence thing. Like even with the McManus kicks, because I feel like being a kicker is so much. Obviously, like, you need physical skills, but it's arguably, like, the most mental position in football. I mean, quarterback's pretty mental. Anyway, like, I think it's really just, like, a confidence thing. And I don't think that, like coaches' messages have been, like, lost on the locker room, or at least not yet. Or, like, the locker room is, like, becoming divided or anything like that. At least not yet. But, like, they just, like, don't have confidence. And I feel like they're pressing, again, to, like, make a play on every single play and try to score on every single drive. And it's like, again, it's like, take a little bit of pressure off yourselves, like, especially when the defense and ETN were like doing well in the beginning of the year. Like, not everyone has to do everything. You gotta just do your job, which is pure coach speak, but I think that's kind of the issue.
Yeah, they definitely looked like an unconfident team against Tampa Bay from like the first play, right? Like, yeah. They looked like they knew they were the worst team, which I had a player tell me earlier in the locker room this year that when they were winning, that was the big difference. Like, that in past years, they'd come out and basically, like from the first play, be like, gonna be a long day. I don't really know if we got this. Yeah, to where their confidence had done a 180. Now I kind of wonder if their confidence is kind of back, like being tanked and back to what it once was.
I wonder, I feel like they're still like harping too much on last year's events, because like during the off season, I think the players did a good job of being like, yeah, that was pretty cool, but like this season is this season, we have new goals. But then at the same time, like during the season, all the players have been like, yeah, like we're definitely facing adversity, but we face adversity before, like we know how to get out of this. It's like you went on like a pretty nice win streak, but it was like in the regular season, like you still haven't done anything. And so like I feel like they have like a little bit too much, like, or had a little bit too much self-confidence in that, like, oh, we're really good and we can do anything. And then they kind of like hit a wall because they weren't as good as they thought. And now they're like, don't know what to think. It's like, are we actually good enough to make a run similar to last year, or are we not as good as we thought? And so I feel like that's kind of where the confidence has been sapped.
If they beat the Ravens, would they have beat Tampa Bay last week?
I think they would have, if they had beaten the Ravens, I think they would have like lost a close one to the Bucs. But they've had so many injuries that they just haven't been able to overcome that, like, I don't think it's, obviously the confidence is a big issue, but it's far from the only issue.
Makes sense. Oh, last thing before. Poor one out for Tyson King. He's become, him and Trevor Lawrence this year just been beat the hell. You know, he popped up on injury report with a finger injury this week out of really seemingly nowhere. Peterson said he broke the tip of his finger against the Bucks. So every week, man, that dude is just every single week. So that's one injury to potentially monitor. You know, he didn't play much the second half. Peterson, I don't know. His answer is kind of both. Like, we took him and Cisco out because, you know, we're still getting their legs under him. And then also we took them out because, you know, they were struggling. I'm interested to see how much Campbell in general that you see this week, because, you know, it is kind of getting to the point where, is it even worth having him out there? I think.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in that too. But again, like, there's a big difference between covering Mike Evans and DJ Chark. So hoping that'll help.
Fair enough. All right, Gus, we'll be right back. Give you our picks. All right, Gus. After my successful picks last week for Mr. Ridley, I got your lock of the week. I got two locks of the week for you right here. You ready?
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready.
Bryce Young over 173.5 yards. Lock that in.
Passing yards?
173.5 passing yards. Yeah, lock that in.
Okay.
Also lock in DJ Chark over 23.5 receiving yards. I'm glad we don't keep scoring these for records.
Yeah, I always write these down, and then we never come back to them. But I'm going to write them down anyway. DJ Chark over how many yards?
23.5.
23.5 receiving yards. And then Bryce Young was over 173 passing
and
yards.
And a half, yeah.
And a half, okay.
Yeah. And then
– blocks. And then –
I like ETN under 60.5 rushing yards.
Okay. I like ETN. I was going to say over his rushing plus receiving yards, but I'll go ETN over 60 rushing yards just so we can stir the pot a little bit and maybe come back.
Yeah, dude. What's the last game he had over 60 yards?
I don't know, but I can find out. What's your guess? I think he hasn't run for 60 since – I think he's done it once since the bye would be my guess.
Okay. He hasn't done it since the Pittsburgh game.
Okay.
His high since the Pittsburgh game is 56.
All right.
He went 35, 52, 56, and then over the four-game losing streak it's been – 45, 35, 31, 12. So literally going down as the losses are stacking up.
Yeah, okay. I want to buy the dip, but 60 is a pretty high line for how unproductive.
That's what I'm saying. That is what I am saying, my friend.
All right, well, maybe I'll go over 20.5 receiving yards for ETN. I like – under 55.5 receiving yards from Engram. The Panthers, off the top of my head, they've allowed the second fewest catches, the third fewest targets, and the sixth fewest yards to tight ends on the season. And so I think Engram will like get a couple like checkdowns or like short passes, but I'm not really expecting it to be a big Engram game.
What was that stat that you double checked on Twitter? It's like him, like how many catches he has, like with the minimum first downs. He's been checked down Charlie, and that's not his fault.
That's why I called him a couple weeks ago. Like one of my hot takes was that he was a crossing route merchant, and like that's pretty much why, is because like clearly he's good, but like it feels like he could be better. And I think part of the like I'm trying to pull up the stat. I think part of the reason for the stat I'm about to say is that like he's not really used downfield a lot. Like it's not like his A dot is one and he's only used at the line of scrimmage, but like he's never really used on like seam routes or like just like routes more than 10 or 15 yards down the field.
It feels like a usage thing to me.
Yeah. In week one against the Colts, he had like that pretty sweet sideline contested catch. And like, it feels like that's been like the only such play the whole season. So the stat is Engram is the only tight end or wide receiver in league history with over 95 catches in a season, but fewer than 40 first downs.
That's crazy.
In league history, that's pretty crazy. It's not even like since the Super Bowl era. He's been, I mean, I don't want to say he's been inefficient, but that's that. Peg him out to be inefficient.
Can I make one note?
Yeah.
Out of 74 tight ends this year with at least 10 targets, he is 62nd in A-dot.
Mm. There you
5 go. 5 yards. But I will say David Njoku is 2 spots below him, and he's kind of gone dummy. So
yeah. I'll also add that I think his catch rate is decent, or at least Press Taylor thinks it is, because D-Rock was doing a story on Engram since he's about to reach 100 receptions on the season. And so he asked Press a question. And Press was like, yeah, I think like the most impressive thing about it to me is that he's getting a lot of volume, but he's also turning like that volume into receptions. Like he's about to hit 100 receptions, and it's not like he has 150 targets or anything like that. He's doing a good job of catching the ball when it does come his way. So
yeah, he's at 81% on reception percentage, which I don't know. Let me try to bump up the targets here to, let's say, 50. Kind of narrow it down some. Which 81 feels good.
Yeah. I think above 80.
Yeah, it'd be third among 23 tight ends with 50 targets this year.
Who's first and second?
Dalton Kincaid and Cole Kmet, who.
Wow.
Fake player.
I would have guessed like Hawkinson and I don't know, someone else. Those are
Kelsey is fourth, which I would not have guessed.
Who is?
Kelsey.
Yeah, I would have thought he would be lower.
Hawkinson is seventh.
Where's Kittle at?
Who?
Kittle.
14th. Kyle Pitts is last, and Njoku is just over him.
Oh.
God, what a weird season for Njoku.
Yeah. He's
low A dot, low reception, but he's turning everything into like a touchdown. That's crazy.
He should make the Pro Bowl. He's gotten so much better at blocking too since he first came into the league.
Yeah, he's a good player. All right, guess score prediction.
First of all, let me just give a lock of the week.
Let's hear it.
Let me go. Was there any Parker Washington props?
Shut up.
All right. I'll just go Chuba Hubbard under rushing yards, which is set at – I don't see it up, actually. But I would take Chuba Hubbard. My score prediction is Jaguars 24, Panthers 21. I think Trevor Lawrence plays and they eke out a disgusting win at home. But if Trevor Lawrence doesn't play and CJ Beathard starts, I think it's going to be like 34-3 Panthers.
But my official
prediction is Trevor starts, Jags win by 3.
Jaguars 23, Panthers 21.
Hmm.
I don't know why. I don't know why I'm picking them. I shouldn't be. I really don't know why. But
you told me you were going to take the Panthers, and here
I said, I think. I said this is a long week, and I think. I mean,
I like that you're going with your gut, though. That's what you should be doing.
Yeah, I think for as bad, terrible, downright unwatchable as the Jaguars have been at times over the last month, they have to be able to beat the Panthers, right? Yeah, in a must-win game. If they can't, I haven't said fire a coach since Urban like let somebody grind on him, but if you can't beat this Panthers team, it might just be kind of a lost cause.
Yeah, I think if they do lose to the Panthers, I think there's going to be a big firing, and it's kind of just a matter of who wins the power struggle.
Yeah, that'd be an embarrassing loss. So I'm picking them begrudgingly, and I am not sold on it. And the more I talk about it, the more I want to go back on it. So I should probably stop talking about it.
One of my hot takes this week is that Doug needs to take more control, because it's annoying that like the same issues are popping up now that popped up in Philly, where it's like he lost the power control with a general manager in terms of like direction with the team. And then he was just stuck on Press Taylor for too long. And apparently like not letting go of Press Taylor was one of the things that got him fired from Philadelphia. And now he's here in Jacksonville, and he brought along Press Taylor with him, and he's letting Press Taylor call plays, and he's letting Balky construct the roster. And it's like, you gotta like turn this from Trevor Lawrence's team into Doug Peterson's team during the season. And like, even if you're not able, like a power struggle doesn't happen and like Balky doesn't go out the building, like you got to take back play calling from Press. You got to like make some changes to your coaching staff potentially. Like you got to like take action and make sure that everyone knows that this is your team. Cause we've talked about how like the front office kind of like sat with their hands and didn't do much during the off season, but like what is Doug doing? If he's not calling plays, if he's not like inspiring the locker room, if he doesn't have a lot of like control or say in like the personnel decisions, like what are you doing? He's gotta like get into action.
That is kind of my stance when it comes to Press, that for any vitriol people have for Press, which I won't argue at this point, you probably have to have the same feelings towards towards Doug, right? Because one, he hired him; two, he promoted him; and three, it's still Doug's offense. You know, like come on, dude, you're still super heavily involved. Like at the end of the day, the buck has to stop with him. I think so. I don't disagree with you. My hot take is, you see, how many former Jaguars? LaVisca won't be playing. So the only former Jaguars would be Chark and Shaq Griffin. And so I can't predict two former Jaguars touchdowns. I predict DJ Chark outproduces. I said it was a Calvin Ridley week. Okay.
Shaq Griffin outproduces Tyson Campbell. Would be a good
one. No, I'll say Chuba Hubbard has twice as many rushing yards as Travis Etienne.
Oh, all right, that's a pretty good one. Yeah. Twice as many. I think they're both.
Might be 24.
Yeah. All right. I got another one. I would make Trevor Lawrence and Josh Allen the second highest paid players at their respective positions this offseason.
Yeah, I really wouldn't have.
What do you say?
I really wouldn't have a problem paying Trevor like people think, dude. Like, it's obvious. Like, yeah, the turnovers have been an issue, but it's obvious it's more the offense than it is Lawrence is what's dragging them down.
Yeah.
I think any sensible person sees that.
I feel like it's the same story for both sides, where like Josh Allen isn't like turning the ball over or really making any mistakes himself, but like both sides of the ball, I feel like are just getting like dragged across a finish line by Trevor Lawrence and Josh Allen. So at first the take was I would give Trevor Lawrence a fully guaranteed contract, which I personally would, but I know that no owner would. And so that's why I said I'll give him the second highest contract. He's like no one's going to give the Deshaun Watson contract to anyone, but I would like I'll give Trevor like the most guaranteed money in his contract behind only Deshaun, pretty much. And then like for Josh, I said second for him too, because Nick Bosa just signed like an absurd extension where he's getting paid $34 million a year. And he like, he's also a previous defensive player of the year winner and like has a lot more kind of on his resume. But I would still make Josh Allen a $30 million player, $30 million per year player. I feel like we've talked, or you've talked a lot about, or used the phrase, like, don't let Josh Allen out of the building this offseason. That's pretty much how I feel. Like, it's just like two clear blue chip guys on either side of the ball that you can build like those sides of the ball around those players. And so, like, I kind of think that they've got a quarterback, a pass rusher, a head coach, and a defensive coordinator all in place. And you just got to build around those four.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Josh Allen. I don't know, when we talk about their offseason mistakes, maybe we need to, because I don't really mention it, need to talk more about not paying Josh Allen, how that right now definitely looks like one. You know, like, it definitely seems like you could have bought a lot lower on him, and now you're either franchise tagging him and probably pissing him off to no end, or franchise tagging him and then signing him in the summer like you did with Ingram, which the issue with that is it prevents you from actually using the franchise tag to keep a guy from hitting free agency, which is the entire point of the franchise tag. Like, it's not meant to be like it isn't meant to be like a placeholder like that. I feel like you get so much more use out of it if you actually use it. Like, if they could use the franchise tag on Calvin Ridley, I feel like that'd be so much more helpful right now than using the franchise tag on Allen and then just signing him in July.
I don't think they want to use a franchise tag on Ridley, though, because I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that they think that if they use a franchise tag on Ridley, then it's going to be a second round pick in terms of compensation to Atlanta. I could be wrong, but that's part of the reason I'm assuming so hard that like Josh Allen is going to get the tag no matter what. And then they're hopefully figure out an extension after the fact. But like, assuming I'm right about Ridley and like they're not interested whatsoever in giving him the franchise tag, even if they did extend Josh Allen before the facts, like, if it's not Josh Allen and it's not Calvin Ridley, like, who else are you going to give the tag to? Ezra Cleveland? Like, that would probably be the best option, which is obviously a terrible option.
No. Yeah, no. No, you're not using the tag on Ezra Cleveland. That's a fair point. Fair point. Yeah. All right, guys. You got anything else for us on the Panthers?
No, yeah. I'm trying to. I'm debating whether we should talk about MVP or not. Maybe we should just save it.
About who?
Off about the MVP discussions and the takes. My take is that, here it is. I don't think numbers should be used in MVP arguments. Like, you can say, like, Lamar Jackson has led his team to the best record in the league, or Brock Purdy has thrown for the most touchdowns of any quarterback this league. But like, when you start pulling up like the EPA numbers and just like list like each quarterback is like, this guy is this EPA and this DYAR and this like value over expectation compared to like all these, like, you can lose me with all that stuff. It's like it's like a democratic thing for a reason, that like there's voters that like are humans, and like that's kind of the point. Like, if the award was just going to go to the most productive player, then like we wouldn't have people voting on it. Yeah. And so like, I feel the same way about like the FSU thing with the committee. It's like, if we were just going to give it to the teams with the best record, then like there wouldn't be a committee. Like, the committee is there to make subjective choices. And so that's why FSU shouldn't have been in the playoffs and Brock Purdy shouldn't be MVP.
Yeah, man. When we see the nerds, the derogatory, you know, post like the stats and stuff like that, it's like, dude, people aren't voting for MVP based off EPA. Like, yeah, a lot of times the MVP winner happens to have a really high EPA because they're a really good player. But the people who are voting on this, and I feel like that's, people forget, like, the people who are voting on this are like just like sports writers, you know, it's like, what, one of the only analytical guys who votes on it might be like Aaron Schatz. So
yeah, and even he is like at least better about not harping in on like one thing. Like he literally made up his own statistic, but like he's like good about like not too much. But like, yeah, like when you're pulling up like all the EPA and stuff, that's what's so frustrating is that like the nerds are supposed to be like helping people like contextualize the sport and like learn more about it. So like the nerds should be at the forefront of being like, Brock Purdy has all these awesome numbers, but it's fake because of X, Y, and Z is like what they should be doing. But instead of just like, oh no, numbers matter more than anything else, and here's the MVP based on this. It's like, yeah, it's the whole purpose.
When I see these arguments, I'm basically telling people like, why aren't you making a case for Baker Mayfield over Lamar Jackson then? You know, like he has better EPA per play, he has more passing production. So do you think Baker is better than Lamar this year? And if the answer is no, which obvious it's no, then you don't, then these numbers don't hold that much. And I think as I've gone on, EPA per play is like, it's an offensive.
Yes.
Like it's not, I don't think it's quarterback. Like it's what, it's like an offensive driven stat, you know, and like, because it contextualizes like all the surrounding factors, yards after catch, stuff like that, that guys generate from. So I'd vote McCaffrey. Like right now, I'd go McCaffrey, Lamar / Josh Allen. I don't care. You know, you give it to either one of them, I don't think would be a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Tyreek, and then Dak, and then maybe I could hear a case for Stafford, and then nobody else. I'm not listening to a case for Stafford.
Has a like decent case. I feel like Stafford and Josh Allen are both like, if they happen to have two ridiculous weeks to close a season. Yeah. And then, like, technically the Bills can still win their division, but it's a little bit of a long shot. I feel like there's no way the Rams would be able to win their division. But, yeah, I would say I wish Tyreek had played a fully healthy season, because then, like, I feel like we'd just be like, he's obviously the MVP. Let's just give it to him. Because he's
probably more likely to win Offensive Player of the Year than he has MVP.
Yeah, I wouldn't be, like, too upset if McCaffrey won. But at the same time, like, he's clearly super valuable, but so is, like, a lot of players on that team. Like, it's not like McCaffrey is drawing a ton of gravity himself, and then it's, like, letting DJ Chark and Zay Jones, like, go wide open for touchdowns. Like, yeah. Kittle and Debo and even Ayuk still pull plenty of gravity on their own. And so, like, I'm kind of hoping that, like, votes for Purdy and McCaffrey will kind of, like, cancel each other out. And then, like, whether Lamar or Josh Allen – or Dak wins it. Like, I mean, I like Dak a lot. He probably shouldn't win it, honestly. So I'm hoping it goes to Lamar, because he's truly, like, I think, been the most valuable player this year.
I think it'll be Lamar or Josh Allen. Like, seeing Lamar like in person a couple weeks ago, he's just playing amazing football right now. Like, what, like five other players have won two MVPs or more in their career, and Lamar becoming the next one would be crazy. So
awesome.
Yeah. So I'm just happy that it's such a narrative driven award that I feel like there's zero chance Brock Purdy can win it after he threw four picks and won the biggest games of the year. So
yeah,
we did it.
All Baltimore celebrating after that.
Baltimore is America's team.
For sure.
Yeah. So
we'll have to do maybe at the end of the year, we'll do like a little award show for, I don't know. I don't know if any Jaguars really deserve any awards, but we can at least say who we would pick out for MVP and everything else.
Bet. Sounds good. All right. Well, we'll be back sometime, you know, Monday, Tuesday. I don't know. We'll figure it out. We'll be back to talk Jaguars and Panthers. Until then, John Shipley, my co-host Gus Lowe. Thank you guys for listening to the Jaguar Report podcast. And don't forget to get your last bulky ball in for New Year.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all new Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno was a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno was elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised Racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.